For May the 22nd of 2020, we talk about Alien Isolation, Tonight We Riot, and we do a free play multiplayer. Welcome to Level 330. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mindsmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I'm at a loss for a way to open this episode. Oh, how about this? How about a programming announcement? Because next week is Memorial Day, there will be no episode. I'm not going to force us to convene on a holiday. So just gonna open with that one for you. We're going to rip that Band-Aid right off.
gonna grill out and try to shove a hot dog through my face mask.
Well, I mean, get an N95. It has that little plastic circle on the front of it.
It's got the hot dog hole.
Yeah, it's a hot dog hole. You can slurp some pasta up through that. Just yeah.
Oh no.
Did you see that Fearless Leader has announced he is taking hydroxychloroquine?
I think he's lying about that. He's not going to wear a mask, but he will take this incredibly dangerous drug.
I think those two things go together, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, no. I saw the headline and I thought, oh, geez, what a dipshit that guy is. And then I thought, okay, what's the stupidest possibility? I feel bad because I literally just tweeted this before I hopped on, but it's like, what's the stupidest of the possibilities? Cause that's probably also the likeliest one. So he is taking this medicine there's all kind of evidence that if you're in an at-risk population, it will kill you. Or if he is lying about it to like save face, like, oh, I believe in this so much, I'm gonna take it even though I'm not taking it, like, yeah. I can see a case for both. I can see a case for both of them being likely. I can see a case for both of them being the dumbest of the possibilities. It's a lot.
Yeah,
I feel like there's a very real possibility that he believes he is taking it and someone's actually giving him like Smarties.
Yes.
Some Tic Tacs.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about a placebo.
That is stupider.
That is really dumb. I mean, either way, we're fucked, but I don't know. I don't have anything going on is the thing. So I'm going to defer to somebody else. Ben,
it's rough, man.
Yeah, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, it's rough generating news when, like, you stay in your homestead for every day. I played a new game this week, so I'm happy about that, at least. To, like,
cool.
Have some more content. But it's like, I feel like I'm running out of steam, though. It's like, I gotta dig, man, for, like, it's like, all right, what game have I not played recently?
Just go to Epic Store.
Good one.
I said, if you're running out of steam, just go to Epic Store.
Oh. No. I appreciate that. All right. I was going to say, you're the only dad on the podcast, too. So
this lines up. Know of.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyway,
you don't have to force yourself to say something at the start.
I can't, like, I'll say this. I went on a run and I found a park that I didn't know existed and it had a beautiful overlook. So.
Oh, cool.
Okay. You need to go back and see if it still appears. Cause that'd be badass. You found a little pocket dimension park.
Yeah. Oh,
shit, that would be tight.
The All park right, yeah. requirement.
What?
It's like a Harry Potter room of requirement.
Oh, well, okay.
Cool. You really need to get a park and it's there for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. I've had a bad, like, today's been a bad day for me. Catching references is a thing. So,
oh, no. Yeah. Oh,
to be fair, generally not catching things is like 90% of what I'm trying to do.
Right. Yeah. How are things up there in Manhattan?
Same old.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
I don't know. The honest answer is, like, I don't even know anymore. It's one of those things where it's like, things are going actually pretty well, but that still means lots of people are dying.
Yeah.
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 Like,
so
how are the supplies holding out up there?
Actually, they've been a little better. Okay. So it seems like I went to the grocery store last week, and that was actually the first time that I went to the grocery store and was just able to like find everything I needed.
Oh, cool.
So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. So I'm hoping that means they're ahead of things, although I'm still hearing a lot of stuff about like meat shortages. So I might, you know, need to read Jala's recipe book soon.
Yeah, no, I've heard about the meat shortage and stuff as well. I've run into like a little bit of it, but I mean, that might just also be a function of when I go, you know, grocery shopping too. You know, I think that I go at a peak time or whatever, but also I've got a bunch of my mom has like hopped on the hookup for like restaurants nearby that are selling their meat, you know, just because like, oh, the meat's about to go bad. And so like, I've got like a 5-pound log of ground beef from Steve's Dakota Grill, here in Ontario. Oh, it's an Ontario, Ohio establishment, and it is,
yeah, I was gonna say, like, that's my go-to, like, when I go home to visit and my parents are like, let's go out and get something, like, Steve's Dakota Grill is where we go 90% of the time.
Yeah.
I need to look this place up.
Oh, it's literally just a steakhouse in Ontario, the town where we grew up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people have been talking about like, hey, you know, if you want to get food and, you know, one of these things, you know, this is actually a time when, you know, going and like getting takeout from your favorite place is, you know, kind of actually a good thing because, you know, a lot of these places are struggling to stay open.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's frustrating, though, is there's like two restaurants near me that I really like, but I can't figure out how to like order from either of them.
Oh, huh.
Like at least one of them, I'm fairly certain, at least the sign on their door says you can like order from them online by going, I cannot figure out how to do so.
Oh, that's frustrating. And you don't want to do something like Grubhub because they'll take a huge portion of the
right,
proceeds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've heard something that made sense of, you know, some people going together and just straight up like buying a cow directly from a farmer and like, you know, ship this to the butcher and, you know, do the thing, divide it up, that sort of thing.
No, I've heard of that too. That like a couple of those have gone down on the local Facebook group here. Some cow buys. Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, the cows are out there. It's like, all that's broken is the distribution system. The food's there.
So I think this makes me surprised that people are very like unwilling to eat stuff like Beyond Burger patties or like, I don't know, or any sort of substitute for meat. Cause I don't know. I guess I'm just finding out that I'm not very attached to meat that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I feel like I really want them to find a middle ground in that I don't trust Beyond Burgers because it's like,
unknown right now.
Well, it's like, what if we took fast food and tried to think how to invent something that's even more processed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like lots of steps put into it as opposed to finding a way to get, you know, protein complete just from plants. Yeah.
And it seems like there's, on the other end of the spectrum, you have the people that are like, you know, just like eat spiders. It's like, I'm not doing that. Like, it's like, like we need meat substitutes that are sort of in between. Like, don't just pretend to be meat if you're not, but also don't be something that you know people aren't going to want to eat.
How do you tell you, David, you've eaten spiders?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Just statistically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait, is this the spiders crawl in your mouth when you're asleep thing?
Maybe, yes. Is that what it is?
That's
I think
what
so.
They say.
Like statistically, you'll eat 8 spiders in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Well, I mean, all of us also are going to, like, you know, insect protein is going to be a thing that we're going to have to get used to within the next 50 years. So,
what?
why don't we just eat tofu?
I don't know. Okay, it's my thing. I might as well face it. I'm addicted to bugs. All right. Dennis, how about you?
Not much.
Not about bugs, but what's going on?
Oh yeah, yeah. I too love bugs. yeah, nothing too crazy. It's, you know, you kind of hunker down the same old way.
Yeah.
I have a kick-ass story playing No Thank You Evil with the kiddos. We can put that here, or we can put that in.
Let's put that here. I would remind the audience, yeah. No Thank You Evil is the tabletop game that is made specifically to play with small children. Is that correct?
Yes.
Like a superhero themes kind of deal.
Yeah. Well, it's a whatever the hell the kid thinks of.
Gotcha.
It's an incredibly flexible system. Mm-hmm. But you know, Luke and Milo have been playing the same characters since they started. We're about 10 sessions in, and Luke wanted to try a new character. He's like, I want to be a muffin man. And I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds kind of cool. Why don't you draw a picture of it? And he draws it, and he's like, this. And I'm like, oh, that is like a literal sentient muffin. Like, that is, it's not a man who delivers muffins. It is a muffin man. And he had all these ideas around. Yeah, and he can like break off pieces of them, throw crumbs, and it's like his minions. And so he's going crazy with that. So I'm like, this is cool. All right, this is fun. So we jump in, and I suggest the idea like, oh, what if he was the result of a baking accident in the Hex Kitchen, which is a location they visited, and there's a head like witch slash chef there that they interacted with. And so it's like, oh, she had a baking accident and accidentally made a sentient muffin.
Did she turn a person into a muffin, or did she
straight up baked it?
Okay. So all right.
From ingredients.
Oh, I made a muffin, but it's alive.
Consciousness slipped into the ingredient list somewhere.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You never want to add too much consciousness. Yeah. That's an amateur baking mistake.
Otherwise, it'll be unconscionable. Anyway, jeez. So you know, Luke.
You get one more of those, by the way.
I'm already at, damn it, already at quota. So Luke's all about it, and he's like actually role playing it. Like his last character was effectively him with superpowers. But this muffin man, he's doing like a funny voice, and he's pretending like he doesn't know how anything works because, you know, he was just baked. what's the world? Which is hilarious just to see someone like, you know, digging into that side of tabletop gaming. and so I forgot when we were creating the character to give him a pet, and everyone in No Thank You Evil gets a pet. And I'm like, oh, actually, this is really fun. So the witch from Hex Kitchen wants Milo's character, Reed and the Robot, to take Muffin Man and help Muffin Man find a pet. And that's the adventure for today. And we're off. And so Luke's like, I want a cat dog. And I don't think he's like, ever seen the cartoon.
Okay.
He just went there. I was like, okay, well, you can only find it.
He just invented cat dog.
Yeah.
Now you should surprise him with the show and be like,
yeah, I've been thinking about this. I made something for you.
I called some folks.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, you can only find the elusive cat dog in this one enchanted forest, and they adventure and, you know, go to the forest and get in, and they get in there and find out that the cat dog is actually quite intelligent and doesn't want to be anybody's pet. And so they're trying to figure out what to do as a backup plan. I'm like, please let me have raised you well enough to not enslave a cat dog against his will.
Okay.
I do not wish to be your pet. And so Luke's like, I have an idea. If I study you, then I can bake a gingerbread cat dog, and it'll be perfect because I'm a muffin man, and I'll have a cat dog. And Milo's like, oh yeah, I'm a robot, but so you can use me as a toaster.
Wow. He worked his way around the moral corner, and it also was teamwork.
Yeah, a little teamwork.
Yeah. Oh,
so now. The real question is the gingerbread cat dog going to ask him if he has a soul?
This I haven't gotten to yet. But what did happen is, so, you know, they put the ingredients in, and Luke rolls a check. I forget which skill I used, but to cook it successfully, and rolled a one, like failed miserably.
Okay.
And I just watched the first episode of Solar Opposites. I don't know if anyone's checking that out, but it's
the new Justin Roiland. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's the whole you know, the things mold together to become this hideous monstrosity that, mm-hmm. you know, attacks them. So I think I had a bit of that in mind. I was like, oh no, it's gone horribly wrong. Like, it's now a gingerbread cat dog monster that's spilling around like, blah, 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 it's attacking you. And so they fight it for a couple rounds and stuff's going down. And Luke goes, wait a second. If we just add enough sweet ingredients to it, maybe it'll become nice enough to tame. I'm like, I love it. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you got to think of something sweet, and then you have to roll a successful attack to add it, or like a fast check, an agility check, essentially, to add the ingredient to him without getting hurt. And you have to do that 3 times. And if you fail your check, you have to think of a different ingredient. Like, you know, you got to keep going. And it took them like 5 or 6 tries. And they added, I think it was gummy bears, candy canes, and chocolate coins. And he tames it. And so I was like, okay, well, it's nice now. I'm nice now. And Luke's like, good. That's my pet.
I'll accept it for who he is.
Oh, that's really good.
And yeah, so he's now a muffin man with a gingerbread cat dog homunculus. Tabletop gaming with Kid Logic is fun.
That is delightful. Will Muffin Man ever go stale?
We'll have to find out.
Okay. I mean, if he does, that's yet. Bonus armor.
I mean, but also it would be a negative to fast, right? So it would take down his agility. Yeah, I guess is this the point where you really hammer home that mortality exists?
just go super dark.
Like, I mean, let's go for it. Like,
disadvantage.
Yeah. what if Muffin Man gets ants, you know?
Yeah. Oh, or he becomes like a bakery vampire where he's got to go and like eat yeasts or something every
baking soda.
He has to find other baked good people and suck out all their frosting or their or their jelly. Yeah. In order to keep himself going.
Dungeons and Dragons is a lot more fun when you apply realism to it.
None of this is realistic. All that I'm looking for is very horrifying situations to put this very small child into. There's nothing weird about it.
I thought it, you know, enslaving a sentient creature to be your pet was right on the board there. So he handled that with a plum. I gotta hand it to him.
Yeah.
So that's. How's that for nothing going on in quarantine?
That sounds so sweet, dude.
Yeah,
it is. It is fun. Like, they are getting to a really, really fun age. So
nice.
It's good stuff. Awesome. He also still hates, just to bring it back down to reality, right? Still hates to poop, and you can tell how long it's been since he's pooped by how grumpy he is.
Oh, so okay.
If he's ever just super pissy, I'm like, dude, go sit on the toilet.
Yeah, you need to.
The brilliance and the childishness, it's all together.
Well that sounds like some banter to me. I think that we should get going into the regular kind of show. We've got the grind. We have a free play multiplayer. I'm gonna round out with you know, just the end boss like we usually do. And why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, you said you've been playing something new, so I will throw it to you.
Yeah, it's a game that Duckfeed host Gary Butterfield is in the special thanks section of.
Ooh.
Does that narrow it down for you?
So it's a Kickstarter game of some kind.
Possibly. So it was. I played Tacoma over the weekend.
Oh, dang, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so... That surprise at the end of the game was more impactful than like the punchline of the actual game.
Yeah, I know. Which Steve, one of the lead guys over there at Fulbright, like he's a network acquaintance. Yeah,
all right.
I think Gary like play tested it a little bit. Like he went to the launch party and stuff. Yeah,
gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's what I figured because I knew the company that made it was in Portland, so I figured there was some connection there. Mm-hmm. But so as you mentioned, it's made by Fulbright. They also made Gone Home was their first game, right?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't
it?
Yeah.
So this is their follow-up game from that. Completely different thematically. Instead of being like a very like kind of small, like intimate family emotional thing, it still has like the intimacy part, but it's people on a spaceship orbiting the planet, kind of 2001-y a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a similar experience in the fact that you're walking around an environment a whole bunch. You can interact with objects as much as you like, pretty much. And you're finding out more and more about the story through kind of artifacts in the environment. In this case, instead of it being purely through like letters and like kind of small talismans or whatever, they have a system in this game where they have like recordings of people having conversations on the ship.
Yeah.
Like the idea is that there's some sort of like HAL like presence, AI, like a ship AI that just records all these things passively. And so in certain areas you can reconstruct these. And this is kind of like the main gameplay mechanic is you'll have this like set piece that's maybe like 1 to 2 minutes long. And they give you like 3 different points where you're supposed to go and like investigate, like somebody's like journal or something like that to see like what data that they have. But basically what it's doing is it's making you kind of find all these pieces of the conversation that are going on at the same time. There might be like 6 or 7, characters at a given time. Mm-hmm. And so, you might see one person come into the, like the main area at the end of the scene, but you can rewind and fast forward as much as you want. So what you can do is you can rewind and then follow them back to where they started. And they might have this like completely almost hidden conversation with another member that might reveal new information.
Mm-hmm. And because you're in this space that is kind of preserved, after the incident that happened there, like that will lead you to like new physical clues and stuff too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I'm not sure how much... Oh, sorry, go ahead. So, what were you going to say?
Is this the one where you can also, like, spacewalk?
Yeah, so they have it broken up. One of the reasons why I compared it to 2001 A Space Odyssey is the ship spins. And so there's basically 2 different areas that you can be in. There's one in, like, the center where it's, like, weightless and you just float around. And then if you take an elevator to any of the rings, you have artificial gravity there.
Yeah.
And so you just walk around in those environments.
Mm-hmm. And you can play 0G basketball when you're in the weightless hallway at the center.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's a really, I don't know. It's an interesting game because, you know, it's like pretty much every other game in space, you shoot things and like, there's a gun in the foreground and this doesn't have any of that at all. Kind of like narratively, it's like there's similar like setup and payoffs to like Gone Home, where it kind of like tries to make you think it's going to go in one direction and they kind of do some surprises, I guess, towards the end. I guess that's what stories do, right?
The specific zags that they do caught me off guard and made me invested in that kind of story when I was initially left cold by what it presented itself to be at first, right?
Yeah, I liked surprise number one, and the surprise number two I thought was hokey, maybe. Mm. If I'm boiling the game down to 2 surprises. Yeah. But I mean, overall, I think I had a positive experience with it. I think it's a well-made game. It's, you know, like the vistas that you get of the space, they're kind of like few and far in between, but they're really nice whenever you see them. Yeah. The characters are really well fleshed out. So like kind of the same care that they put in Gone Home, it seems like they put here
with really good performances too. I mean, like, and you never like the way they're visually presented, they're like polygonal ghosts kind of. So it's like, they're silhouette, like there's no facial animation. Everything is just kind of communicated through the vocal performance and the poses that the animators put in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're looking at like kind of like, it's almost like N64 box graphics of like characters, but they have like a badge picture or something that you see when you hover over them to like kind of give you an idea of what they look like.
Yeah.
That was an interesting choice of presentation as well. Granted, like it saves a whole bunch of like development work. So I can appreciate that fact that I was thinking about it. Another game, this is like a side note, I was watching one of my friends play Inside over the weekend because they hadn't played it before. Mm-hmm. And I thought of it's kind of a similar concept there too, where it's like the character is very stripped down, right? There's no face on it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it saves a ton of work that you need to do. And so with that, you can kind of invest more time in like doing really convincing animations for, you know, like what the character is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's probably a similar thing going on with this game too, because I think it's a smaller game studio. I'm not sure what the size of Fulbright Games is, but
yeah, it's small. That's
yeah. So yeah. So overall, I definitely enjoyed the experience. I forget how much the game costs. I think I got it on sale, but I don't know.
It's been out for a while. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely an interesting game to play. It's not You could do worse. I'll put it that way with what's out there.
With the game being so centric on kind of dialogue in these scenes, does it have good, systems around being able to like start and stop dialogue or walk around? I feel like that's one of those things that should be figured out by games by now, but is consistently gotten wrong.
Yeah. So basically the main game mechanic, it's like the Batman investigation in the Arkham games, right? Like where I think they introduced this in the Arkham, the one that was not made by Rocksteady, the like Arkham Knight I forget what it is. Arkham Origins.
Yeah, I think
it's that one. So I think they introduced the mechanic in that one. I could be wrong. Where it's basically showing you a scene and you can fast forward it and rewind it at your leisure. But it basically has a complete scene and you can rewind or fast forward at any point in time. It's exactly like that. And so they've just made that the entire mechanic of the game. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, that part's completely fine. Like, I never felt like it was buggy or anything like that. I think that kind of goes in with what I was saying, is I think it's a really well-made game. It seems like a very stable game. It seems like a very well-made game. Like, a studio of a much bigger size, it seems like, would have made it or something. If that makes sense. Yeah.
So, amazing what a little focus can do.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's mostly all I got. I've spent the rest of my time like watching other people play games. I'm watching one friend play through The Witness right now, and I'm watching my other friend, another Portlander, I'm watching Perk play through Inside, since he's never played through that before.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm gonna say one more thing at the end of this. This is something I was thinking about. 2016 was kind of like 2007 for movies. Is that the right year? Where it's like Inside and The Witness are kind of like No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood coming out in the same year. It's like two really great games that are pretty impeccable, but like hard to say which one's the better one for the year. But whatever.
Yeah, just it's weird how stuff sometimes lines up like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, you said that you have you have some stuff to talk about here for The Grind, so how about you?
Yeah, so I actually had a number of new things I tried. So I picked up a game called Tonight We Riot.
Okay.
Which is basically a riot simulator.
Okay.
It's
from whose point of view?
from the rioter. So it's made by the terminology honestly of this stuff like mystifies me. I think it's a anarchist syndicate game development studio. Overtly like left-wing game development studio that basically the plot is like it takes place in the far future, but maybe not too far. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Children of Men style.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Children of Men style.
Yeah. Of world that's just, hyper-capitalist and, democracy has basically completely been bought. And so kind of a revolution has started, and so the moment to moment gameplay is you control one person, and it's more or less like a very simple River City Ransom style beat 'em up. But the thing is that you also have the other like people that are rioting with you that follow you around. And you can't directly control them, but you still need to kind of try to manage the overall thing to, keep them safe. And then also, they're real important to, like, your overall power, because while they'll, fight just kind of regular hand-to-hand combat on their own, the biggest thing is... as you go, you unlock various weapons, like the ability to throw bricks or Molotov cocktails, things like that. And when you use one of those items, any rioters near you will also use them.
Okay.
So like an individual brick throwing at like a line of riot cops is very ineffective. However, like, you know, five bricks being thrown into the line is, you know, fairly, you know, get something done.
Mm-hmm.
Like murder?
Like murder.
Yeah.
Well,
like, I mean, to be fair, they are trying to stop you.
Yeah, they are overtly trying to kill you. Like,
okay.
Yeah,
like, it's very, very overtly, like, you know, set up to be, like, this is a place where, you know, explicitly, you know, people tried nonviolent protest, and the cops basically came in and, like, beat everyone down.
Well,
so it's like Hong Kong.
One imagines this wasn't the first resort.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
like, I'm looking at a screenshot, and, like, one of the items you can get that's, like, listed here, there's, like, a pipe wrench, there's a gas mask, and then there's, like, an artifact here called Haymarket, which, you know, yeah, okay, that kind of paints a picture of what they're going for. The Haymarket affair being the bombing of a labor demonstration in Chicago, which is the reason we have May Day here in America. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and it, you know, has a lot, you know, very strong satirical edge to it. Before each of the missions, you get a newspaper article.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do it justice, but, you know, they all are very overtly, you know, kind of a, you know, you just got done on, you know, say a tough mission where the police literally, like, killed half the people that, like, were going with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the next mission will be a newspaper article, like, decrying all the damage to property.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, kind of not even parody. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. The one that I feel like overtly probably was parody when they wrote it,
mm-hmm,
is there's literally, like, one of the police officers and one of the early missions is like, I'm ready to lay down my life for the good of the stock market. Who's with me?
Oh yeah, no.
It's like,
I mean, like, and if you look at like the on the Steam page, their core features, they've got, you know, a couple of real things, but then, like, the very last one is, you know, the last bullet point they say is the unique catharsis that comes from throat punching a billionaire ghoul who would rather watch the world burn and everyone on it burn than lose a tax than lose a tax break. Yeah, they're coming at this from a perspective, let's say.
Yeah, and you know, it is interesting. You know, it's one of those things that I feel like legitimately probably someone could make the thing like, you know, is this healthy? Is it not? That sort of thing. I think they, at the very least, it's one of those things that I think, like, you know, explicitly, like, art is supposed to be controversial. You know, type of thing. And, you know, it seems like this is something, I guess, I would differentiate between, like, a game that is, you know, offensive just because, like, it's being boneheaded versus a game that, like, overtly was, you know, was meant to have a message, and some people think that message is good and some people think it's bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you far enough to see if they, like, kind of successfully end the sentence, as it were? Like, is that thought or perspective fully there?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think potentially some of it is, you know, I'm not 100% sure if maybe the point there, some of the point is that they're not ending the sentence, if that makes sense.
I would be curious, because usually the end game of the violent revolution is where things kind of trail off in left groups, let's say. I would be curious just to see how the plane lands But also, yeah, like, Nintendo let it on their store. So, like, I mean, it's on the eShop.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say at the very least, you know, it does seem it is overtly, I guess I would say, like, a pro-communist game in that, mm-hmm. you know, it is overtly, like, you know, everyone's favorite color is red, and you know, you're establishing a workers' collective, that sort of thing. So, mm-hmm. which I bring up because, yeah, I think there is a certain degree of, you know, kind of utopianism to it.
Yeah.
And again, you know, what you think of that to a certain degree is going to depend on, you know, some of your political economic views, but I think some of it, for better, is probably going to be handled just by the fact that, like, it does have some utopianist undercurrents. Yeah.
I mean, so, like, how technical is the kind of brawling aspect of this? Like, you know,
I would
if
say,
you compare, you know, you, is it a straight up comparison to, like, River City Ransom? I mean, it sounds like there's a lot more going on.
So I would say the actual hand-to-hand combat is very simple. You know, you pretty much don't really have a combination. You just kind of spam the attack button, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where it gets more so is, you know, you have all these different items. They all have limited ammo, you know, and you can get, you know, some ammo pickups, you know, over the course of it. But still, they all have limited ammo and they all have very different behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a you know, a lot of the more gaminess is in kind of managing that and, you know, figuring out, you know, when you're going to use things, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of your actual score at the end. And this is, again, one area where kind of they temper some of the violent stuff is, you know, you're not obligated to kill anyone. It's very difficult to get through the game without doing so, but apparently there is a Steam achievement for it, so apparently it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you receive no score based on how much damage you do. Your score is entirely based on how many of your rioters survive.
Interesting.
And I would say a lot of the challenge comes with actually, like, managing that. So, like, you know, recognizing when, you know, I don't know, something's going to explode, or, like, getting people out of clouds of tear gas. Or,
yeah,
you know, there's something I
imagine they don't take too much convincing on that front.
Well, you know, the AI is not super smart.
Well, also, if you are being actively tear gassed, it might be hard to know which direction to run.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Mm-hmm. So I'd say a lot of it's that. I just got to a level where basically the new mechanic is that the foot soldiers you're fighting are, you know, more or less sympathetic to your cause. So mm-hmm. if you're able to kill the people leading them before you kill them, they'll then join you.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, mechanics like that. So I would say, like, overall, it's probably not the most thrilling beat 'em up I've ever played, but mm-hmm. you know, it is pretty good.
It's I mean, so it's interesting to hear somebody try this again, because, like, the last time this kind of thing was attempted was when Rockstar published State of Emergency,
okay,
which is,
but even that didn't really have a stark political message to it.
It did, yeah. I mean, like, it was specifically inspired by the 1999 WTO demonstrations and riots in Washington, like in Seattle. Like, it was explicitly, I mean, and, like, the agency that you're fighting against is the WTO and stuff. Like, there was a certain political element to that as well. However, it was published by Rockstar, so it probably was not probably didn't come from a sympathetic point of view, let's say. You know, just look at the cover to State of Emergency if you can, and you will see that they, whoever made that, does not actually have a, probably a very high opinion of the people who would, you know, demonstrate in any sense or capacity. Also, it was not a good game. So, I
not hard to be an upgrade from that.
Yes, let's say that.
The only other one I could think of, and this is a very different game, would be like, was it Tooth and Tail?
Tooth and Tail.
Never heard of it.
I think of the right one.
I don't. Maybe. Oh yeah, this one looks a little revolutionary. Real time strategy game.
So it's a real time strategy game where basically, like, this Red Wall style world, except that the animals at some point decide they want to start eating meat.
Okay.
Oh no.
And then, you know, it becomes a thing of like, all right, so who gets to be the meat? And there's like four factions that are each basically different perspectives on that. So like one is the church, which is basically like the elite eat everyone else. One is basically communist, that is literally eat the rich. You know, just things like that. It's a very dark game. It's apparently very good. But
you guys are forgetting out on Just Cause, one of the best rioting games ever.
Oh yeah, I forgot about Just Cause. Yeah, cool. So that is Tonight We Riot. I'm curious about that. I'm also curious to see how it lands.
Yeah. So another one I picked up is Jet Lancer.
Okay.
Which is basically someone took Luftrausers, or however that's pronounced, and decided to make, like, you know, whereas that was very overtly just like a arcadey score attack game, like actually make a full featured kind of almost Ace Combat-esque game. So, you know, you're upgrading your plane and there's, you know, storyline between missions and things like that.
Huh.
So it's, you know, the gameplay is the same, you know, Luftrausers thing. It's, you know, 2D, I guess you kind of say side scrolling, but
side on dogfighting kind of deal. Yeah.
Right. But with the unusual thing being, your plane is kind of more of, I guess you'd say, like a rocket plane.
Okay.
In that, you know, when you're accelerating, you're very overtly like, you know, whatever direction you're pointing, you're, you know, big time accelerating, very large turning radius. However, at any point you can cut the engines.
Oh, geez.
In which point you'll, you know, sort of float and have a very, very fast turning radius. So a lot of the gameplay is around, you know, kind of say like, you know, using that to kind of say like get momentum and like flip behind someone and, you know, shoot them and, you know, those sorts
which
of things.
Which just looks badass.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, looks amazing, feels amazing, is very difficult. but there's also things where, since, again, you're kind of, your plane doesn't really have, I guess, aerodynamics in the traditional sense, you know, in that it's much more of a rocket. So there'll also be segments where it's like, again, this doesn't actually make sense, but video game logic, like one of the missions types is hacking radio towers where you have to be like right next to the radio tower. So you basically have to just kind of feather your rocket engine to sort of stay in place and kind of hover as close as possible.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
I just imagine the pilot yelling hacking like Steve Carell's character yells parkour in The Office.
Yeah, that's, and that would be fairly tonally accurate. so probably my favorite part of it is overall the just completely silly story. It's very much in the flavor of kind of a, I guess, Saturday morning cartoon type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Your engineer is literally a cat with like some sort of device around its neck that allows it to talk.
Oh,
up style.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Very, very explicitly. And, you know, it's just almost all of the dialogue is just excuse for witty back and forth. Like, I think one of my favorite lines so far is just, you know, your pilot, she gets done with one of the missions and she's, that wasn't so hard. I've had tougher training missions than that. And your commander, yeah, I mean, training missions are supposed to be harder so that you know what? Never mind. Good job. So it's just, you know, very much an excuse for that sort of back and forth. You know, I doubt there's going to be a lot of, I guess, kind of narrative depth to it, but it's incredibly, incredibly likable. And, you know, very, very stylish, you know, very cool game.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a game that just looks happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Which stands in stark contrast to Loot Rosters.
Yeah, which is a game that looks angry and disturbingly Nazi.
Yeah, intentionally. Yeah.
I just want to say that the Steam page for this game has videos on the far right side after the pictures. Weird. It makes me very uncomfortable.
No, that's not how it should be.
No.
And then the...
Okay, I hate this game now.
And then the last thing I picked up, and I've only done like the first mission of, but on the Epic sale, I picked up Control, which is, you know, Remedy is kind of a weird place in that it seems like I always forget it when we, you know, periodically have this come up on the, you know, multiplayer question or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, honestly, is probably kind of the dark horse for my favorite game development company. And, you know, I would say Max Payne 2 is, you know, maybe a contender for like my favorite game of all time.
Okay.
Dang.
And this is, you know, a game that's, you know, very much of a kind with the games they've made in the past, and is also just completely targeted towards like my interests. With, you know, I really love kind of the SCP mythos,
yeah,
type of thing, and this is very squarely, you know, that's where it's cribbing from, and at least so far, you know, seems like it does a very good job of doing it, you know, does a lot of really good kind of environmental storytelling. You know, I love the fact that, for example, all of the like flyers, if you look at like one of the office, you know, pegboards or whatever, all of the flyers, you know, actually have real text. And a lot of them, if you actually take the time to read them, you know, have fairly significant, you know, story development in terms of, you know, what the world's like, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say it's a little weird, just because of, you know, current situations, all of the like propaganda about, you know, how important it is to always wash your hands and like, you know, you know, wash your hands for at least however many seconds. And you know, that sort of thing's a little weird. But yeah. Have any of you guys played this?
Yeah. Ben has. I've played the first like hour or so.
Yeah. That's probably about what I've played. So, I don't know. I don't know that much to say about it so far, but I mean, so far I really like it. I really like you know, what it's doing. The weapon you get's pretty cool. And I don't know, the way you the way it's introduced is kind of interesting as well. I also like the weird, you know, fourth wall pseudo breaking they're maybe having.
Oh yeah,
it's interesting to see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think also they do probably the most effective instance of changing the geography on you of any game I've ever played.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think in particular, there's the first time it happens, the game just does not telegraph it at all. Like, doesn't even point out that it happens. Like, your character never acknowledges it. It just happens. And it's really, really effective for it.
I'm trying to think of where that is, because I might have missed it then.
Right after you talk to the janitor.
Okay.
So you've... Okay, so I guess spoilers, so, you know, jump ahead 20 seconds. You only ever, up to that point, the game is completely linear. However, you end up back at the elevators that you entered in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, like, doesn't telegraph it at all. It's the only way you would tell is if you noticed that you end up back where you started and realize that there was never an option where you actually could have turned.
I see.
Yeah. It's important to do that subtly is the thing.
Yeah. It's such a balance between, I want this to be subtle, but I also know that means that a higher percentage of people are going
to
miss
it. You just have to be confident. Trust people to notice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, I'm really going to be interested to see how it does a lot of things. It's going to be interesting to see how it does. You know, it seems like it's taking at least a somewhat, I guess, less cryptic take on the SCP stuff, in that, like, you know, in kind of the actual SCP mythos, there's pretty much no consistent explanation for anything.
Right.
Whereas this...
That's what happens when there is, you know, hundreds of authors and really no central body.
True. Although I think it's also, like, it would be considered very taboo to, like, you know, write anything that explained anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this... You know, it still overtly does that, but there does appear to at least be, like, you know, an actual thread and, you know, kind of some degree of, like, consistent thread between things.
Yeah. Well, so this is, like, SCP style. It's not an official SCP.
Right. Yeah, yet. Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Happy Fun Ball?
No.
No.
Like the SNL skit?
Yeah. Happy Fun Ball is it's an SNL commercial, I think from like 1992 or something like that. Like, it's got, you know, Phil Hartman doing the voiceover, but it's a, you know, like it opens up just as a very short commercial about a toy ball, but then the joke of it is that it has just an inexplicably long disclaimer at the end. And I'm just now realizing that Happy Fun Ball might be one of the first instances of an SCP style thing. So it's like, you know, only $14.95 at participating stores. Get one today. Warning: pregnant women, the elderly, and children under 10 should avoid prolonged exposure to Happy Fun Ball. Caution: Happy Fun Ball may suddenly accelerate to dangerous speeds. Happy Fun Ball contains a liquid core, which, if exposed due to rupture, should not be touched, inhaled, or looked at. Do not use Happy Fun Ball on concrete. Discontinue use of Happy Fun Ball if any of the following occurs: itching, vertigo, dizziness, tingling in extremities, loss of balance or coordination, slurred speech, temporary blindness, profuse sweating, or heart palpitations. If Happy Fun Ball begins to smoke, get away immediately. Seek shelter and cover head. Happy Fun Ball may stick to certain types of skin. When not in use, Happy Fun Ball should be returned to its special container and kept under refrigeration. Failure to do so relieves the makers of Happy Fun Ball, Wacky Products Incorporated, and its parent company, Global Chemical Unlimited, of any and all liability. Ingredients of Happy Fun Ball include an unknown glowing green substance which fell to Earth, presumably from outer space. Happy Fun Ball has been shipped to our troops in Saudi Arabia and is being dropped by our warplanes in Iraq. Do not taunt Happy Fun Ball. Happy Fun Ball comes with a lifetime warranty. All you would have to do is like redact some of that, and it would just be an SCP entry.
Yeah.
Do not taunt Happy Fun Ball.
All right, so now we need to go find the Simpsons episode that is closest to SCP.
Yeah. Probably Funzo. Yeah.
Have you played any of the actual SCP games?
No, they've been recommended a couple of times for Abject Suffering, but they've never come up on a thing.
Yeah, I like how it's that and not Hex Crank.
Yes. No, I just
can't make the bar.
I understand that a lot of them are like weird, like cash grabs, but
yeah. So I think there's one or two that kind of, I guess, kind of the core ones that have be, you know, I guess aren't cash grabs. And from what I can tell, I think the they're sort of one of those things where they're super, super janky and not that great of games, except for the fact that like they've kind of got the net hack thing going on, or like the Dwarf Fortress thing where, you know, it's community development and people just keep adding more and more of the SCPs to the point where just like all of the weirdness that, you know, can happen, you know, sort of then justifies the game.
Yeah. Maybe it's worth a second look.
This makes me really want to play like an X-Files video game. Wouldn't that be sweet?
They did one. They did one for PlayStation. It was like FMV.
I played that one.
Oh, sorry.
Let me put it this way. This makes me want like Rocksteady to be working on an X-Files game.
You could try XCOM The Bureau Declassified, which is like, what if XCOM was a third-person shooter and in the 1930s? I'm not going to tell you it's good, but it's probably the closest thing you got.
I am deeply disappointed by that game and kind of blame the fans. But that's all another thing.
I mean, they, if they're going to make an X-Files game, it has to be like L.A. Noir.
Well, what about, like Thimbleweed Park or whatever? I mean, wasn't that basically what if we mashed up X-Files and Twin Peaks?
It spirals in different directions, though. I think if somebody went to that looking specifically for X-Files, they might be disappointed. Mm. Yeah. Huh. So Control.
Yep.
Nice. Is that all you got? Tonight we riot in Control?
Yep.
Cool.
And Lancer. Jet Lancer.
Oh, Jet Lancer. Thank you. Jet Lancer.
You've already probably the most about it because of their anime style.
Which is probably the most anime sounding name I've ever heard, by the way.
Jet Lancer?
Yeah.
It's pretty anime.
We can go animeier.
I'd prefer not to. hey Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna go out with a whimper instead of a bang. I haven't played anything new.
Okay.
I can report in on XCOM Chimera Squad. If you remember last week, I'd kind of gotten over the difficulty hump and was kind of stomping, and I was like, oh, maybe when I start a new investigation, it'll ramp up difficulty. Nope. I'm still stomping. To the point where I'm like almost intentionally ignoring side quests to like get through the content.
Oh,
So I can start over on a higher difficulty.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm too invested to want to just hard start over. But it's not requiring a ton of thought.
So you can't increase the difficulty partway through?
You can, but you can't get credit for winning on that difficulty.
That's where I'm at with Fire Emblem right now. Or it's, yeah, the difficulty is very lackluster.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it, when you, so much of XCOM is about getting over that initial difficulty curve that I feel like if I artificially powered up my soldiers and then switch it to a higher difficulty where I've like got all the verbs and, you know, all that stuff, it just, I would make different choices in the early game, and that's part of it. So, not to say I'm not enjoying it. It continues to be a really cool, quirky, you know, sidestep to the left of XCOM that I appreciate. But this is a good illustration. Like there's so many good ideas in this game, and the execution on them just varies so much. So, one of the ideas is like, depending on which order you choose to do the three investigations in. So there's three factions. You will get different takes on their story. Like, especially I'm learning now, the final mission will be different depending on how fast you get to them, as it were, which is a super cool idea. But I got to the end of the second investigation, and again, I'm stomping, I finish it, and I'm like, that made no sense. Like that, there was just, I won't spoil anything, but it was complete. It felt like non sequitur. And there were like seeds of interesting plot ideas, and none of them got delivered on, and just kind of cut off abruptly at the end. And I'm like, what the hell happened? And so I do a little research, and come to find out, I just killed the boss so fast that it didn't get to the dialogue that would have made things make sense.
Oh, wow. No, you.
So, whoopsie. You know, and I, you know, not that it would have made complete sense if I had waited a little longer, but just the combination of kind of that idea and a little bit of vulnerability to maybe they're not completely thinking through what if someone crushes this, kind of led to a lot of confusion for me. But mechanics wise, the flow of kind of alternating turns instead of the whole team going at once is starting to feel a lot more natural. And certainly, and this is like all XCOM games, as your soldiers get more verbs, as they level up and get more abilities, your ability to deal with enemies in that turn-based format becomes a lot higher.
Okay.
So I think the first week I talked about it, I complained that it felt very binary. You can either kill the next soldier in order or next enemy in the order or not. And that's kind of that. Now I'm feeling like I'm a lot more equipped to kind of play around and have creative solutions to the problems it puts out. So, that's XCOM Chimera Squad.
Have you hit any bugs in it yet?
I've had it crash a couple times on me. Almost always at the beginning or end of a mission.
Okay.
Although one time in the middle. So it's, yeah.
Seems like end of a mission would be pretty brutal, but is there good checkpointing enough that it's not a big loss or?
Yeah, the checkpointing is pretty good to where I only had to replay like one move. Essentially. So yeah, I've never lost anything. I've run into several abilities that just overtly don't do what they say they'll do.
Nice.
It's good standard. Good standard to hold.
Yeah. Where, you know, it's like, you know, shots on breach will stun. So, or, you know, if you hit an enemy, when you breach, it says they'll get stunned. And so the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, sweet. And I spread it around. So I didn't kill anyone. I just put damage on a whole bunch of different people. And then those people proceeded to shoot me. So cool. I guess you can do that while stunned or something. So there's lots of little quirks like that. But I will say that it's not more so than other XCOM games do. Like that is unfortunately part and parcel with the franchise, is just a ton of little quirks and rules interactions that you can't anticipate and don't really work the way you think they will. Some of them are completely like, okay, that goes directly against what it says. Others are kind of technically following the rules just in a counterintuitive way. It can be fun to puzzle those out or like feel a sense of mastery as you learn all those pitfalls. And there's definitely like, it's in the ethos of the game to learn it the hard way. But when it's just blatantly wrong about what an ability does, that sucks.
That's very weird emergent gameplay.
But you know, it does feel earned, where it's like, I know this is lying to me, or I know, like, okay, this ability triggers that and that triggers that, and it forms a weird triangle. I know which one will activate first, and that informs my decision making. It's amazing, and this is like the D&D effect, where it's amazing how often those little quirks that you would think like this never in a million years is going to trigger exactly that way come up and matter. And you know, it's life or death, and you're like, oh man, okay, you know, you got to play out this incredibly complex rules interaction. It's a form of fun if you can laugh about it when you wind up having your run destroyed by one of those interactions the first time, which I understand puts me in the vast minority.
No.
Yeah. So that's XCOM Chimera Squad.
Cool.
Yeah. I've been playing more SteamWorld Heist, so it's just a turn-based strategy bonanza. Fun one for that. So I'm playing it with the kids. And there was a new character that they liked very much called Ivansky. He's like a Russian weightlifter robot. And he had, I at the same time I got him, I also got this explosive launcher where, you know, it's like firing shells that explode. And just did not quite have a handle on how to angle those and you know, how to control it, essentially. Meaning that I accidentally got Ivansky to kill himself twice in a row. I pissed at me. To the point, I'll have to ask Jen to actually send me the video, but Milo like got up and left the room, walked out, Jen was sitting on the front porch, and like complained to Jen.
can you believe what happened back there?
Yeah. He just had one HP and daddy killed him.
Oh,
I'm sorry. And so now they won't let me take Ivansky into any more missions. Well, and it actually makes sense because he's under leveled now, because you don't get experience if you die.
Yeah.
They also just don't trust me with him. So that's my story from SteamWorld Heist. Otherwise, not a ton new to talk about. And that's me.
Nice.
I'll see if I can dig out that video and I'll post it to the Slack.
That'll be very fun. For me, I've really only got one thing, and I've been streaming it, so like if you want to get like in-depth commentary on it, you can go watch those. But I'm probably about halfway through Alien Isolation right now.
Emotionally or through the actual game?
I've been processing this for years. One is halfway through, the other is halfway through with it. I said halfway through. So the game as of right now, so one thing that people told me to do, and I was initially reluctant because I wanted to see, was people were like, hey, you're going to want to bump this down to easy because normal mode is very, very hard. The alien, the other things that are going to be chasing after you, it's really persistent. It's going to kill you a lot. You're going to get frustrated with instant deaths. And I was like, okay, well, we'll see. It's very much the case. And, you know, I think that with a couple of exceptions, like the easy mode in this would be the normal mode in another game. So like, if there's anybody else who's been like on the fence about this game, do not be terribly afraid of making that, just because like, I don't know, like things just will sense you in ways that you know, that feel kind of like bullshit. Like I'm sure it's modeling, you know, it's basing detection off of something, you know, that like, you know, about the way you're moving or something you're walking over or walking past, but it's just like, you're going, you're dead. Was a little bit the thing that I kind of ran into. So like for my, starting with my third session, I bumped it to easy, and like bumping it to easy makes the xenomorph more, let's say manageable. But then the humans get like way too dumb. And like, so there are points where like, you know, cause you're trapped on this space station that, you know, is derelict anyway, but then there's a xenomorph out and everybody is stranded. There's other stuff going on that is causing everybody to rip each other apart. So there it's kind of like Bioshock, where there are just, you know, factions of people who are just looking out for themselves. Right. And you're just trying to get off of the station and find information about Ripley's disappearance, right? Because you're playing as Ripley's daughter. But you know, like, you'll be in a room, and then like some basically raiders or bandits will like walk in. You're like, ah, shit, I need to get into a corner, and like one of them will like look directly at you, and like you're just standing right there, like 3 feet away. Like if they were a real person, they would say, "Oh, I'm sorry," and then like step back to give you your space.
But you do the tracks from Guardians of the Galaxy and stay real still.
Yeah. No. And then just like you're standing there for like, okay, is he gonna go? And then like 10 seconds later, it's like, wait a minute, I'm gonna get you, and then pulls out his gun and fires. Like that like I've had that happen since I moved it down to easy, so it's not perfect, but it's still better than instant death. I mean, so do I need to clarify, like, Alien Isolation is the one it's like the Alien version, like Alien crossed with like Amnesia, The Dark Descent.
It's the good one.
Yeah. I mean, like there have been good Alien games, but like this is the one that
compared to Colonial Marines.
Yes. Yeah. But you know, this is you stranded on a station. Everything's trying to kill you and you're hiding and trying to, you know, for me, go around and look at all this really awesome, like, set design that perfectly evokes the original movie to me.
It's tough to watch the game because I feel like it's 95% of a great, great game. You know, mm-hmm. I think like maybe the only missing piece is like the game design of like what you actually need to be doing. Like I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's the only part that seems like could have used maybe a little bit of polish, but yeah. Everything else is like really masterfully done in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it the Dead Space style just sending you on errands back and forth across the ship or
kinda, yeah. Like it'll be, hey, we need to go get this because this person is injured, so go to the med bay to get the trauma kit, but then the way back is, you know, you can't go that way because it blew up, so you have to go through another section. It's very Dead Spacey, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The way that they like stretch gameplay time is that it takes a long time to like sneak around the alien. And yeah. So if that mechanic wasn't there at all, like there's just nothing really to do in the game. Yeah. You know?
They need to do like a Garfield without Garfield, just with aliens.
I mean, that mod exists. Like you can take the xenomorph all like you can take all the hostiles out and like basically do it as a tourism mode mod. And like, I was initially skeptical of the appeal of that, but like, the visual design in this is really, really good. Like it's an interesting space to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, I understand why they had to make it this way. Like, you know, part of the thing was to make the xenomorph intimidating again, because like there's that first movie where one of them kills everybody but one person. And then after that, people are just housing xenomorphs left and right. So like they, you know, they want to make them a meaningful enemy here, but like, I don't know, like just instant death is not interesting at all to me. And yeah, there are some moments where it's real, you know, scary, like, oh yes, it's right there. I thought he would go the other way, but no, he came right at me and now I'm dead. And it's startling and it's oppressive. And you know, if you watch the stream, you'll hear me like, you know, catching my breath because I was holding my breath because like, oh, it's real tense or whatever. But like, I don't know, just if this thing sees you and runs at you immediately, you're dead. And because of the way the game, you know, does save points and checkpoints and stuff, you could be set back, you know, a really long time. It doesn't really checkpoint at all. So I wish that there was a way that they could have arrived at a conclusion that was not xenomorph sees you, now you are dead, you know?
Yeah.
Because like when the androids, when the working Joes, like the really cheap, shitty androids that they have, like those things are plenty scary and they don't kill you immediately. They like come up to you and try, you know, and start strangling you and you can outrun them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just choke you a little bit.
It's like choking.
Yeah. Just like corrective choking.
So can you ever get like a, you know, smart gun or anything like that and actually fight back?
You eventually do like get something that will scare it off. but like even that, it adapts to a little bit. You have the ability to like craft little one use disposable items, you know, like noisemakers and EMP bombs and flares. Molotovs. It's flares. It's hilarious because like this, okay, recipe for a Molotov cocktail. Cool. I'll open it up and see. And there's like five ingredients that you have to get. Like, what are you talking about?
Each one is on a different side of the ship.
Wait, yeah. are they
at least... driving a Pentagon ship?
Are they at least realistic? I mean,
like it's all like tech doodads. So like one of them is, okay. You know, one of them is ethanol, and it's kind of like The Last of Us,
that
where
makes sense.
Yeah, but you know, like you're picking up ethanol to make like med kits with because of disinfected and stuff. But then there's just like other stuff like, you know, sensor injector stuff like that. It's just, yeah. I mean, like, so yes, the Molotov is very powerful, so they need to make it expensive. But like the fact that they have Molotovs that have five ingredients, so it's like a techno Molotov, is very funny to me.
Yeah. So this is something that they were able to solve in Friday the 13th, where like one of the items you can get is a switchblade. Mm-hmm. And so if Jason ever grabs you, you get like a get out of jail for free card where you stab him in the neck and then you're loose and you can run away. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's like a... They do that in the Resident Evil remake, both 1 and 2. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like they maybe like having something like that for the alien would have been made for more enjoyable gameplay experience.
I know there are mods that let you do that. Like there are mods that make the stun baton work on the Xenomorph, stuff like that. So I'm enjoying it.
I feel like I almost would have preferred just like don't have a storyline, just have it be, you know, completely sandbox, but then also, you know, jack their survival up to, you know, 11.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, you have to, I don't know, you know, freaking, you know, track the vent system of the spaceship to know whether I'm downwind or not.
Yeah. I mean, like, so like there are cool story moments. I'm not going to, I mean, like there was sure. One thing that happened over this past weekend that was like, okay, yeah, I as a fan feel served. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
I think maybe if they did the alien lesson, maybe made more things like, I don't know, combat with other humans or more interactions with like Joes. Like, I don't know. I think there could have been some quality improvements just with like the mission-to-mission gameplay.
Yep.
I'm still disappointed that Colonial Marines ended up being crap, because that was the one I was interested in.
Well, I mean, they spent many, many years hyping it up.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they just need to make a sequel of this game. They have an amazing engine in place. It would be a shame if they just made one game with it.
Yeah, no, I'd be curious to see what they do with the next-gen stuff. But yeah, so any other questions about Alien Isolation?
No, I just wanted to echo one point where I think you said one time in the stream, like, this game looks amazing, like, even today. Like, it's and you're right. Like, the graphics look as good as, like, modern day games, like, right now.
Yeah.
Wait, how old is this?
I mean, it came out in 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it doesn't do people very well. Like, when you find other people, it's very clear that it is, you know, 2014. And it's a studio that doesn't necessarily... I mean, like, it's a studio that does primarily did a bunch of Warhammer stuff. So they didn't necessarily like have a realistic style, but like the working Joes and the Xenomorph and specifically like all the sets, it is all beautiful. And something that they managed to pull off is they have very good film grain applied over everything. That is not just like, you know, oftentimes like somebody who does visual design will say, oh yeah, film grain, I'm going to put a bunch of scratches over it. You know, like it's a, you know, like it's a silent movie being aired from like 1930. No, like film grain is like a specific thing. Like it's a way that it's the way that it's rendered. It's the emulsion on the actual film. They actually get the right kind of film grain in this, which is good. And there's lots of really good optical effects that happen, specifically like, you know, chromatic aberration and lensing and stuff like that. They do really cool stuff to mimic glass, as cinematographers call it.
See, I don't understand that though, because like unless the conceit of the game is that you're a robot, like none of that stuff makes sense.
What I mean, it's just
like unless you have glass eyes.
No, I mean it's mimicking film is what it's supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess. It's like when a video game has lens flare.
Yeah, yeah. It's using it is mimicking the materials of filmmaking. Yeah. Cool. So that's
have to say, though, good. As a point of order, I feel like saying, like, for having 40K be your, like, prep for this is kind of cheating, considering a significant portion of 40K is what if we made aliens but didn't pay for the license.
Well, I mean, every piece of science fiction after 1980 has either pulls from Alien or from Blade Runner. Like Ridley Scott, you know, did everything. Yeah.
He did his best work in two movies.
Yes, he did. Oh, The Martian's fine.
I agree. That was my review of it as well. Yeah. It was
fine. I think the only one of his I've ever seen has been Prometheus, and that was not good.
Oh. Have you seen Gladiator?
I have seen a significant portion of it. I've not seen it in its entirety.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where normally we ask you a question and then you answer it, but this week is a free-to-play multiplayer where it is flip-flopped. That's right, you are asking us the questions, and I will get started here with Ollie, who says, if you could go back and change a single plot point in a game, be it a major one that changes the story or just a minor one that wouldn't have a huge impact, what would you change? A character gets to live? A lie isn't told? What would it be?
Oh, man.
This is a good question.
Mm-hmm. I feel a lot of responsibility here.
Can we answer this like two or three questions from now?
Okay, so I can go first because boy, do I have a couple.
So you say the Stanley Parable?
Or... Yeah, I mean, what I did debate saying the Stanley Parable, in which I would, you know, change the decision to make the game. But that was just me being snarky. First off, I'm going to cheat on, because it's not a video game, but I think like work of fiction, it would definitely be Avatar The Last Airbender, and just removing the Deus Ex Machina, and you know, Aang learns an important lesson that, you know, pacifism is not a viable philosophy, and has no choice but to either kill the Fire Lord or, you know, usher in, autocracy.
Okay. I've never seen or
traumatize that child.
Basically, the
I can surmise it based on the summation you gave. I can't add anything more to that. What about video games?
Like in the last 5 minutes, he learns that he can magically take away someone's powers.
Oh, gotcha.
And like it's very Deus Ex Machina. Other than that, I'd probably say if I could have Shadow of War without Talion just being a dick to everyone.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That would be great. If I could have Harry Potter with changing Dobby's death so that he still died but was more painful. That would be
really? Kind of all over the place here.
And I think my actual one would probably be changing the ending of Life is Strange to have some sort of ending that accomplishes the you know same thing they're going for, but doesn't completely invalidate the entire rest of the game.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
was able to think of one.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Go ahead.
I would take away the DLCs for BioShock Infinite, not because they're inherently bad, not because they're like inherently bad. Like I played them and they were fine, but it's just that I love BioShock Infinite as a game like so much that I think anything like kind of adding on to it kind of detracts from that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that should stand alone.
And rambling on after you have your big finale.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm having nothing come to mind.
This is just a you know, let's do this like a series wide one. Let's make, so take Dark Souls and make them either find different words, like a different name for the different kind of giants, or like define who the actual giants are, because like across all three games, there's seven different kinds of giants that are put into it. And like, they are actually like plot relevant, specifically in two, but it has repercussions, you know, in every direction. And it'd be real cool if they didn't just say like, important race in the world. Okay. They're giants too.
So what, one other nuance. Just quick hit on this Metal Gear Solid 5, just a resolution to the kind of whole arc of Quiet that made any sort of sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
I've got one for you now. Oh, go ahead.
That could justify Hideo Kojima's like trying to shame fans about it as well.
Yeah.
Weird. I would change Uncharted as a series, their decision to move away from having like supernatural twists. Like I really like maybe once doing that, like I get it for funsies, but like I really enjoyed that kind of campy, you know, over the topness to it, mm-hmm. and kind of knowing that was coming. It was very exciting. And so when they were like, we're too cool and serious to have that now. It just felt like they were, you know, getting a little big for their britches. Like, yeah. Listen up, like you don't have to move away from that to still have deep, rich characters the way you're having.
Yeah. I mean, people love Uncharted 2 more than any game in that series. So,
Where do you think that ended at?
We all know about, you know, all those Indiana Jones movies that didn't have any, you know, supernatural elements to them.
Yeah. What was your question, Ben?
Where do you think the campiness and like super natural stuff ended at?
Three had a big bit around like, oh, we're going to make you think something supernatural is going on, but really it's just hallucinogenic drugs.
The Scooby-Doo, yeah.
Yeah, they exactly. And then from then on out, they just kind of whimpered on it.
Yeah.
Even in the, it's like their little...
Lost Legacy?
What's that?
Lost Legacy?
Yeah, even in Lost Legacy, they kind of veer away from anything. Which, you know, at that point, like you're uncovering civilizations that have made these amazing unlockable contraptions with mechanics that move mountains and stuff. And it's like, yeah. you're not that far off. You can go there. Like, it's just a weird place to like hold themselves back.
Yeah.
Did they ever do Ancient Aliens?
No. No.
Nazi submarine right out of the gate, though.
Yes. And that like that set a tone that I feel like the supernatural twist was very much in time with.
Yeah.
But it just they abandoned it. The only thing to do is The Last of Us 2 needs a supernatural twist.
Check the spoiler, see if you're right.
Wait, does it already have zombies?
They're scientifically explained. Like it's not magic, it's just, you know.
It's vegan zombies.
Vegan zombies.
Let's see here.
They come from plants.
Chris says, what's your favorite game that doesn't involve blasting people, punching people, or stabbing people? Myst, baby. No, I'm serious. I'm looking at two Myst posters that I keep over my desk. I love Myst. So
I guess that reminds me of The Witness, so I guess I'll say that answer.
Yeah.
I scrolled through my games list just to see if that jogged anything, and I came across Thomas Was Alone. Have you guys played that?
Yeah.
You remember that game? Great, great game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's
as long as you're okay with emotional violence. I am open to suggestions.
Oh.
L.A. Noir.
No, that has shooty stuff.
It does. All right, sorry. I guess that's going to rule out Heavy Rain and Detroit Becomes Human then, too. Those aren't the main mechanics, but they're in
Chroma Squad, I guess technically there's no real violence.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Gone Home could be on that list.
Myst.
Yeah, I guess to come as well.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Well, oh, man.
In space, you can't shoot.
Well, yeah, because it causes decompression. Yeah. or I guess it wouldn't be yeah, I guess it would be decompression. Yeah.
So I have to say, though, it may say something. I scrolled down, and in alphabetical order on my Steam list, Gone Home is the first one that that I get to that does not involve violence. So.
Patrick writes, to go along with all the remakes coming out recently, what single classic game would you remake, and how would you change it?
All right, I'll say this on theme for this week. I'll remake the X-Files game, the motion video one, but yeah, make it like an actual AAA game.
Hmm.
That'd be dope.
Could see that.
Yeah. Let's do the original Fallout and maybe Fallout 2 as a bonus, because you're halfway there, but with kind of a more modern interface, I think.
Would you do full on like Fallout 3 3D?
No. It would still be the top down. You know, basically do it like Divinity Original Sin, but still on a hex. You know, still on the hex grid. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Has there been a remake of Crazy Taxi with modern sensibilities yet?
Don't think so.
No.
I think I go to that well.
Okay.
That seems kind of surprising that hasn't actually.
Right.
Yeah. Because there's just not a lot of call for arcade games right now. New ones anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that many people were into Crazy Taxi too. Is this like the silent majority?
I didn't say that. I just said that.
I mean, it's considered a classic.
Yeah, Crazy Taxi's good. Yeah.
I think I would maybe go with Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl.
Hmm.
Nice.
And mainly just make it more accessible.
Yeah. I mean, like, I
control wise or story wise?
I think mostly control wise. I could see it getting some brush up story wise, most notably, the voice acting is incredibly bad.
Notoriously bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, I forget what I was going to say.
I'm looking it up. Crazy Taxi was kind of banished to mobile game hell. So
yeah, that happened with a lot of Sega stuff. Yeah.
Mm. Hey, Greta, can you not play with that? Thank you.
Okay, she was playing with the bottle cap.
You sound like me on every work Zoom call ever.
let's see here. Jason writes, having what feels like less and less time to play games, truck driver, fatherhood plus three, sleep, I really only play through something once. When offered the choice, do you go nonviolent or Killy McMurder Tank? I can't make myself go the latter. It's frustrating because it feels like nonviolent is the highest. It's frustrating because it feels like nonviolent is highest skill and often rewards more experience and whatnot, but you miss out on so much cool weaponry. Deus Ex Mankind Divided was my last confrontation with this issue. Went pacifist, got it. Never got to stick any dudes to walls with nanoblades. Sad times. So in a game,
yeah, I completely agree with this.
Yeah. So in a game where you have the, you know, the Deus Ex style or the Dishonored style, go nonviolent or go non-lethal or, lethal, which do you tend to go for? I tend to go non-lethal. So
this is why they have save files. So you go non-lethal, then some Friday or Saturday night, crack open a beer, mm-hmm. go full on violent, get all your pent-up aggression out, and then reload the last passive saved.
Yeah.
See, I think for me, I tend to have the kind of the Batman syndrome. You know, the idea, you know, Batman would be a much more effective superhero if he was actually less good at martial arts, because he's so good that he can beat everyone without killing them. Therefore, he's obligated to do so.
Oh.
I feel like that's kind of the thing I have. I mean, not so much I'm super good, but I mean more it's like, I feel like a lot of these games, it's often like you either play them non-violently or you play them stupidly.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So my latest example of this was Shadow of War. And I usually go stealthy friendly. And for Shadow of War, I was like, screw it. It's orcs. I'm going full on. loud mode, and it's felt fairly supported and rewarded.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that is the mostly correct way to play that game.
Nice. Noah writes, what game has your favorite enemy death animations? I'm going to say Doom 2016, because it feels most integrated with the way the game is trying to make you feel, not just like when you shoot something until it dies, but specifically the glory kills that you do that net you more resources. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not technically kills, but I'm going to say Pokemon. There is, since I've been playing Pokemon Sword in the recent past, it reminded me just how, the huge dopamine rush you get with the three, ticks where the ball might pop open.
Yeah.
It's just such a little moment of tenseness and then joy that I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of them being captured as, their death animation. Two now.
Yeah. That suspense is there. How about you, David?
Man, this is tough. I think if we were going to stretch a bit, I'd maybe say the Assassin's Creed franchise in particular, with kind of the combination kills can trigger.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say the main target kills where you get a nice long monologue.
Yeah, no, I thought you're just saying that because you like the phrase requiescat in pace.
But the one that I don't know I'd exactly say, but the thing that immediately popped into my head for this, so is at least the most memorable, was City of Heroes, which is the only MMO I've seen that actually had ragdoll physics for your enemies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nice. How about you, Ben?
This is a tough one, because if the metric's something like realism, it could be one answer.
Choose the one that matters most to you.
I'll say this one. I'll say the Lara Croft death animation of her head going through a log still sticks with me to this day. So
from Tomb Raider 2013? Or
Yeah, okay. The first Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
So, wait, Was that the one where you're underwater, that one?
No, she's sliding down a waterfall or something. But I want to throw out some honorable mentions. Friday the 13th has amazing ones. Mm-hmm. Inside has some amazing ones. I want to back up Doom as great ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Zach writes, what game do you wish had a little more time for the devs to work on it because you know something great is there, but it didn't get the polish that it needed? I'll do this one right away. Metal Gear Solid 5. I wish they would have finished Chapter 2.
Or not finished Chapter 2. Gone either way, it would have been good.
Yeah, it's halfway in the middle, but that is my answer. I would have liked to have seen what they had planned for that.
I'll say Knights of the Old Republic 2 for similar reasons.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say Aliens Isolation and Aliens Colonial Marines.
Okay. Dennis? That's
good. Yeah. Nothing comes immediately to mind. I mean, I've got XCOM on the brain, but that's always a bug fest, no matter how long they get. So.
Right. Yeah. Lucas writes, what is the most interesting failure of a game that you have played and why? Yeah, interesting failures.
Oh man.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Rule of Rose, because that is probably the widest gulf between the ambition and just tonal excellence of the story compared to how it actually feels to play. You know, it is a game that I think actually has really good literary, kind of value to it, but I would never put it in somebody's hands and say, hey, I should just make a video that explains why it is so badass. But yeah.
I'll say No Man's Sky for mine. I thought I had a huge amount of ambition, and I think, as everyone knows, maybe did not live up to it, but
we're in this weird time where it can fail initially, and because of patching, you're eventually get there.
So I would say probably No Man's Sky and Fallout 76, both specifically because they're very interesting examples of the fact that the failure could have been seen coming a mile away. And I feel like should give a lot of insight into like what works and doesn't work in game design, but probably will not.
My answer would be Metrico for the PS Vita. It was a puzzle game. They were like, this system has a million different ways to interact with it, and we are going to use all of them. And I love that game to death, and literally I think I was the only one. So objectively, I think a lot of people found it not fun to have to use all the different inputs. We're looking for something a little more streamlined, a little, you know, that doesn't force you to get up and move around the way that it did. But I just thought it was thematically there, even if it resulted in some frustrating gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. OMG Moose writes, when the current situation in the world finally goes away, what couch co-op game are you going to invite everyone you know to come over and play?
Overcooked.
Which one can you play with sticks?
What?
Oh, Johann Sebastian Joust.
Is that like a reference to World War IV or something?
Yeah. That's why it's going. Oh, yeah. With gotcha. It,
I like that you skipped over. Oh, wait. Yeah. World War IV. Sorry. I thought, oh, you're skipping over. No, you actually said it. You did it right.
It's included. Yeah.
Yeah. It's baked right in. In World War III, is presumed.
I went to Texas and move controllers.
Yeah.
Because you're the, we have to have one person on the show that has hope.
Yeah, we can't all black pill, so
I will happily be that person.
We'll tag in it out, I guess.
Oh man, there's some Jackbox games I think it'd be fun to do in person, like the werewolf game. Push the button would be really fun to do in person.
For me, it's gonna be board games. Like, I really miss being able to play board games with people. Mm-hmm. So I'm jonesing for that.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
It's Overcooked for me.
Oh, yeah, you already said that. Sorry. I lost that in the World War IV thing.
we've gotten almost to the extent of what we can accomplish with two-player. I think I mentioned that you unlock, like, you know, a fourth star that you can get in every level.
Ooh,
and yeah. My theory is that it is designed to be achieved with four players cranking.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure if they just changed the score targets. I kind of assumed they did, but seeing how high it is just for two players, I have to imagine that you need more players to get there.
Yeah. And did you have an answer, David, or was whatever you can play with sticks your go-to?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, actual couch co-op has never really been my thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of not the target market for this one. I'm looking, I mean, ironically enough, I am actually looking forward most to hitting people with sticks via martial arts. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was sort of a sarcastic answer, sort of the real answer.
Yeah, but also sort of sarcastic, sort of sincere. I get it. Yeah. Let's see. Mike writes, I have this weird thing that I like to do when I'm playing video games. If I have to step away for something for a minute, I like to not pause, but just let the character hang out in the game world. Naturally, the challenge is to find out whether a particular area is safe or if an enemy will eventually stumble upon you. I got the idea from Souls games, where you famously cannot stop what's happening when you pause. It adds a layer of excitement and keeps my mind on the task. By not being able to just warp outside the experience. Do you have any quirks like that with games that you play?
I don't think I've intentionally left it running, but it is always delightful when you come back to an idle animation that you didn't know was there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's the best part of what you're describing.
Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily have a quirk. I think that if I had one, I would be so far down. I would be so far down the road with it that I would not identify it as a quirk anymore. So, yeah. How about you, David?
Probably like closing doors behind me and, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, tends to be my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have to say, though, as much as... like you said, Dennis, idle animations are amazing. Idle, like, chatter, that's like, are you gonna stand there all day? That is my
Yep. How about you, Ben?
I don't think I have anything interesting. It's mostly just like completionist stuff, like trying to search everything in an area until I get bored with the games.
The autosave, the save, the second save.
That's definitely true.
Yeah, oversaving is definitely a thing. But I've just been burned so many times that I, you know, that's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
let's see here. Callum writes, what classic game do you wish had a sequel or another sequel if it's a series? Slightly cheating for my own answer is wishing Shining Force 3 had been released in a way that I could play. Either that or Guardian Heroes 2 being a thing. I mean, a new Silent Hill game would be neat. That's a boring answer, but it's true. So
if you could take any pre-existing Silent Hill engine and make a new game out of that, which one would it be?
Probably 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see, what was the Mercenary series by Pandemic?
Oh yeah, Studios. Those are fun.
Those are a lot of fun, and I think there's a lot of analogs now. Like the whole destroy anything. Uniqueness has spread around a bit, but I still think a proper Mercenaries game would be fun.
Yeah.
I think I'd go with a sequel to Magination that wasn't awful.
Okay. That's the Game Boy Color card game, kind of like a Pokemon card game kind of thing. Yep. Ben, how about you?
I don't have a good answer for this, but I'm going to crib from Dennis's and say there's a Star Wars multiplayer game mode that I perennially will reference on this podcast, where it's like a base defense thing where you make units and you attack another person's base. If they made a sequel to that, I think it would be awesome.
And then the final one here, Alexander writes, we're coming up to a new generational leap forward in console games, so we can dream once again about how the future might improve on games as a whole. I've been into all the talk about load screen free games and 3D sound being an unexpected component rather, 3D sound being an expected component rather than just a gimmick. What do you guys hope we get out of the next generation of gaming?
I got one that I come back to pretty consistently, which has nothing to do with actual gaming, but I want to be able to walk up wherever I want to play and just have everything connected and set up sound devices where I want them seamlessly. And, you know, stop messing around with wires, stop messing around with, oh, it's coming out of this output, so it's in my headphones and not the speakers or vice versa.
Yeah.
I just want some sort of smart system recognition where it knows where you are and what screen you're looking at and caters directly to that.
Yeah.
Which maybe I'm just begging for Google Stadia. I don't know.
The only thing with that is what you're begging for is caters directly to what that is for most people.
Yeah, yes, that's you're looking true. For the average, which will satisfy nobody. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily have anything for this. Like, really, all that I want is just, you know, lighting. Like, lighting is the thing that always impresses me. It's, you know, I'm not being paid to think up I guess I kind of am being paid in this instance to think one of these up. But my imagination is very limited. And, you know, most of the big improvements that happen end up being visual. So, yeah. I guess that I just want, just give me good lighting, always better lighting.
I could see, I think there's a fairly good chance that exclusives die this round because, you know, Microsoft has realized that they make computers.
Yeah.
You know, I think I would love to see virtual reality kind of get locked in, if that makes sense. And then the other thing I'd say is if like gesture and motion tracking actually became reliable enough to make core games around.
Yeah. How about you, Ben? I forget. Did you say something?
I have not. I don't know. Anything that'll make devs' lives easier, I think.
Yeah.
I
would like 40-hour work weeks would be good.
Yeah. I'll share the sentiment of VR, though. It would be nice for that to get kind of buy-in on the console side and be able to play like Half-Life Alyx without having to pay exorbitant amounts of money.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there as well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer going forward, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. I'm going to get started here. Last week, it was announced that they're going to be releasing a remaster of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. And it's going to hew closely to the originals. They have assured us that it is not going to be a disaster like the time they tried to do this in 2012. The videos all look very promising. They've got most of the soundtrack back in. There are only 5 songs that they do not have, and fortunately none of the ones they couldn't get were deal breakers, so that's good.
I always assume that means the bands or whoever owns it right now is like, no, I want more money than they were willing to give.
Is there
any circumstance when there can be like a non-asshole reason they aren't able to get the songs?
It might not be the band. It might be that the band does not own the rights to that particular recording. So like the recording rights. So there's the composition rights and the recording rights. And usually that disparity is what keeps the actual band from saying, go ahead and use this. There are only 5 tracks that aren't going to be on there, but all my favorites are in. So, you know, they've got videos out with all the comparisons. Man, I am ready for a new Tony Hawk game. Something else that is very fun is that all of the original skaters are coming back, but they are not modeling their bodies from 20 years ago. You've got all these old ass skaters who are mostly retired.
Yes. You have the option to do original or new, or is it mandatory dad?
I think it might be mandatory dad. So it's just the flying dad bods. Yeah.
So. I still love all of like Tony Hawk stories he tells of people like stopping him and be like, dude, do you know you look just like Tony Hawk?
Tony Hawk's Twitter feed is just one ongoing existential nightmare. My favorite is somebody asked, are you Tony Hawk? And Tony Hawk said, yes. And then the person just responded, why?
Why was directed at the 2012 remake that failed.
But yeah, like this is coming out in September. It looks amazing to me. It was everything I could do to not just go pull out an old Tony Hawk game and play it this weekend. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm crazy into that. Let's see here. Next one, Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, mine is going to be just a thing exists story. There is a game that is becoming available on the 20th. So by the time you hear this, you can go download it, called Crucible. And it's by like Amazon Games. It looks like, you know, I usually describe the cycle, which y'all know how I feel about. I usually describe that as like a mix between Apex Legends and Overwatch. And I think if it's a spectrum and they're in equal increments, I would say there's like Apex Legends, The Cycle, Crucible, Overwatch.
Okay.
This is looking a lot more kind of gamey or cartoony, I would say. Mm-hmm. And
more Rule 34.
More what?
More Rule 34.
You're going to have to explain that one to me.
Rule 34 is a joking law of the internet where if it exists, there's. Yeah. So is it as horny as Overwatch, I guess, is what David is saying.
Sorry, I was not in that mode. Yeah, something like that. Although the big, you know, they'll make porn out of all of them. So it's more cartoony. It has the objective based nature, but maybe a little bit more of a PvP format. Maybe like an open world Overwatch is the right way to describe it. I'll be interested to get my hands on it, just because I really love the way the cycle blends PvE and PvP together. And it looks like this has a lot of that ethos. So Crucible is coming out. You should be able to go download it right now and play it. You will likely find me somewhere in it.
Okay. And Ben, how about you?
I got two news stories. There are two different tech demos over the past week for PS5. So one was actually would have been a good segue, but I didn't paste it in time from the last question of the multiplayer. But they did a tech demo for the Unreal Engine. It looks pretty sweet. They mostly, I mean, they talked about basically like how you could import assets into it. And they just kind of did like a lighting demo and stuff like that. It looks really awesome. Like, I it's one of those things where it's like you never know how it's going to translate into actual games later down the road. But what they showed looked really impressive. I don't know if I would play that exact game that they showed, but I don't know. It's like a weird, like flying Indiana Jones type game. But another game that they did a demo of to show what the gameplay was a game called Ghost of, I'm going to not know how to pronounce it.
Ghost of Tsushima.
Really cool.
Yeah. And that looked, yeah, it looks sweet. It's like a blend of like open world in the sense that kind of looks like a, kind of like ancient Japanese version of Horizon Zero Dawn, kind of.
Yeah, it's the Horizon Zero Dawn team, and it takes place in, I believe, Sengoku. It's a samurai Japan, let's say.
So yeah. you got a good eye.
All right, yeah. I guess that, yeah, all right, sweet. And then there's like, but there's like stealth mechanics in it that you can have. Like the character can wear a mask at one point, and that's like an alternate personality, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, the game looks really pretty. So it looks kind of, in that sense, it looks really similar to Horizon Zero Dawn, where it just looks gorgeous.
Hold on, I got to back that up. I don't think it is the studio of Horizon Zero Dawn.
It is.
Okay.
It's the studio that did Infamous.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's Sucker Punch.
Oh, wow. I could have sworn that it was. Oh, nope.
Guerrilla did Horizon Zero Dawn. Sucker Punch did Infamous.
Gotcha.
It is okay. Sony first party studio.
Yeah, yeah. I just I do not know where I got that mixed up.
Yeah, all good, all good. It's something rang weird there. I was like, oh, that's cool if it is, and then
right. Huh.
But yeah, it looks super cool. Sorry to derail you, Ben.
Yeah. It's just I guess good news about PS5 just in general. John Blow, the guy who made The Witness, streams on Twitch a bunch, and he hasn't outright said it, but he basically has a PS5 that he's doing like game testing on or whatever, but he's also spoken very highly of it. So it seems like it's very promising right now.
Yeah, no, it's super weird that we are very much in the period of time when just everything is going to start being a generation straddling game. Like, I am absolutely playing games right now that are going to be, they're going to get PS5 remasters, you know, specifically for 4K, you know?
Yeah. There's going to be the ton of just awkward abandonware kind of stuff where it's, you know, they don't quite want to take it over, but they, you know, they know no one's going to buy it on the old system. And
they've got a PS5 version of Last of Us 2. Like waiting, sitting there ready to go. So
the least surprising surprise.
Yes. Cool. Well, that sounds good.
So I actually lied. I actually found one that should be real quick.
Okay.
So it turns out that, John Carmack, is, making contributions to OpenBSD, which is sort of like, It's basically like off-brand Linux, kind of, you know. Okay. You know, it's another Linux thing. Yeah. But it's also you know, just kind of cool because that's kind of interesting that he's still doing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's also cool because the actual like message and question that I sent is just super, super humble. He's basically asking him like, you know, is it okay if I submit changes that don't actually change any functionality, but might make it easier for people to understand things?
Of course, the answer is, of course you can. You're John Carmack, but you do not want him to be the person to say, I'm John Carmack, so of course I can.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Doesn't he still work it for Facebook? I'm surprised that he can do this.
Yeah, no, I think he's with Oculus still, possibly. Yeah.
I guess when you're that high up, you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing.
Yeah, who are you going to get in trouble with?
Yeah.
Right. and that's the thing I didn't realize until, like, much later is that, like, not only is he like obviously made a whole bunch of really famous video games, but like is also legendary for his programming ability.
Oh yeah, no, he's legitimately a genius. Yeah. Like there is you know, he can do whatever he wants to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Well, that sounds like a segment to me. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Level Number 330. As we said at the beginning, there will be no episode next week because we're not going to be recording on a holiday here in the US. Everybody, please be safe if you're going to go venture out. If you're going to see people you haven't seen in a while, please make sure that you are protecting yourself and others. You know, I will trust you to make that decision, but I guess
it's smart.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, you know, the regular kind of stuff, Greta knows that I'm about to wrap up the show. She always knows when I'm, she knows when I'm wrapping up streams. She knows when I'm wrapping up shows. So I need to go and give her some treats. So you know what to do, all the usual stuff, Patreon, ratings, reviews, tell your friends. Am I forgetting anything?
Don't think so.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets online, on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. And this week I learned how to make a website and you can now go to deckofwondersgame.com.
Very cool.
Ooh. I'm David Meismith. I'm Bobby and Weaving.
Okay.
And I'm Ben Merkel nowhere.
I will. That's a little concerning.
If I can interject, just because it's top of mind for me, on deckofwondersgame.com, mm-hmm. I put together a little board game brand equity pyramid tool. Mm-hmm. I did a survey on like what game designers are interested in that I might be able to, you know, contribute to.
Okay.
And this was the top thing. And so it's just like a really succinct way to like map out the brand identity for a given board game.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And it kind of, it's unique from, you know, what you'll find anywhere else, because it actually accounts for the fact that there's kind of theme and mechanics going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out if you're doing game design of any kind, or if you just want to try like mapping a favorite game. It works for video games and board games. And I'm pretty pleased with it, and hopefully other people will be too.
Nice. That's at deckofwondersgame.com. Mm-hmm. And stick around for some titles. I've got two. The first one is it has a hot dog hole.
Yep.
And the other one is inventing cat dog.
Finding Nemo. Chasing Bobby Fischer. Inventing cat dog.
Designing women. Inventing cat dog.
Both good. I have four.
Okay.
So I've got the hot dog hole.
Okay.
That's for sure. Right off the bat there. I've got We Can Go Animare.
I have that.
I have Corrective Choking.
Oh, no, I don't like that.
And then I've got my ska band name.
Shame, Cole.
What's your ska band name, Dennis?
The Flying Dad Bods.
Ooh, shit, I like the Flying Dad Bods.
So I had one. Was that your last one? Sorry.
That's my four.
Okay.
I had one additional one. I also had We Can Go Animare, but I also had Might As Well Face It, You're Addicted to Bugs.
Okay. How about you, Ben?
I wrote down one, but I don't even want to share it. You guys covered enough.
Okay. I'm going to veto the Animare just because I don't want to get anger anime people.
Yeah, and I kind of like Flying Dad Bods.
I like Flying Dad Bods.
So here's my question for y'all. Is Dad Bods one word or two? Because I wrote it down as one, but...
I wrote it as one as well. The Flying Dad Bods.
Okay. There we go. The Flying Dad Bods wins.
I'm just imagining that would be the greatest... I know a lot of people that, you know, about my age that have gone into, like... where they call them like circus skills stuff. I feel like that would be the greatest name for, like, if you wanted to do, like, a hobbyist, you know, like,
oh, it's their troop. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say that the internet claims that Dadbot is two words, but
the internet is wrong.
As opposed to Dadbot.
My band's name.
Also, I want to make two statements after the recording is over.
Okay. All right. Well, we should end the recording. So I'm going to end the recording now.